you not seen Pacific Rim?
I have. I was just making a joke about The Drift.
Oh, right.
It wasn't funny.
I was going to say, surely you've seen it. You of all people.
Yes, David, I have seen the robot movie.
Yeah, thank Christ.
Because it has Ron Perlman in it, and I will watch everything with Ron Perlman in it.
Guillermo del Toro.
Yes, it does. Guillermo del Toro.
Yep.
His movies and his games. Again, we're probably going
to
talk about...
We're just straight back to Death Stranding. This week on Slowing Down Hype Culture, what's EA up to?
Tune in now.
Who's psyched for the next COD microtransaction?
They haven't actually had microtransactions.
Okay? Yeah, the new COD. Modern Warfare. Yeah, microtransaction. The remake of Modern Warfare.
Wait, no, I'm sorry. The remake of Modern Warfare. The remake?
That is already packaged as part of a different game.
Also
has microtransactions, yeah.
What? Is this a joke? Yeah. Is the universe trying to be funny? Because it's... I mean, it is. That's hilarious.
It's a joke, but the sad kind.
Yeah, you know, the kind where you just go... Oh.
It's a joke that might appear on something like Rick and Morty.
That's not good benchmark for jokes.
Oh, it's funny, but I'm sad.
So sad.
Oh. All right, you ready to do this thing?
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome back, folks, to the Slowpokes podcast. I am Slowpoke number 2, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number John.
I am Slowpoke number Dave.
Slowpoke number John. John Nikolaitis.
Well, Slowpoke number John, as always, we are here to talk about recent, but not like cutting edge current games that we really should have played by now, but couldn't because we're busy.
I mean, there are thousands of good excuses, but sometimes for a game, especially like Undertale,
which is the game we're covering today,
it's like, honestly, John, could knock that one out.
Yeah, it is. It's like, depending on how you want to define it, it's anywhere between, what, five to 15 hours.
Yeah. 15 hours tops. Yeah.
Like, absolute max, you're looking at like 15 hours. Yeah. And... And one of the great revelations of starting this podcast is once you give yourself reason to make time, you fucking make time, don't you?
You kind of do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, of course, we don't mean to sound judgy just because we've successfully been doing this for a whole slew of 3 weeks.
Well, technically this is 4 because time. Travel.
Yep.
We'll never escape it.
Oh, yes. But you know what I'm trying to say. For however short a period of time we've been successfully doing it. It's been super rewarding, but obviously the whole motivation to start this is life happens, right?
Life happens.
People have social obligations and work and...
Sometimes they need to make arbitrary excuses to play things.
Yeah, and it's really awesome that we have that excuse form of microphones and the internet.
Yes.
So, as you mentioned, John, today we are talking about...
Undertale.
That was an invitation for you to say that word.
Yeah, I know, it's fine.
Let's do it again, just real quick. As you were saying, John, today we are playing...
Undertale.
Good. I'm proud of you. No, it's great. I love being trolled by my partner. Well, I'm glad at least you enjoyed that. I mean, like, I don't know if it translates so well in audio when the people are expecting to hear a sound and don't.
I'm sorry, everyone. I'm sorry. It happens all the time. Yes, we are here to talk about Undertale. It's a great game.
Go yeah. On. So obviously Undertale is, as is generally the formula here, a very, very high profile game. It kind of came out of nowhere and everyone fell in love. It was driving conversation on Twitter and the rest of the internet.
People I know from my actual human life in the meat space came up and, good lord, what was that? Came up and told me, and they were like, oh, we can't talk about this game because you haven't played it.
Yeah.
And we're not, no. They refuse.
This is one of those ones where people have been enthusiastic to the point of, not deliberately, but just to the point of aggression.
Yeah, just right there.
At being like, oh my god, you need to play this. You'll have so much fun. You'll enjoy it so much. Which for me is a huge turn off. But... as is usually the case, when eventually I do find the time to cave...
that's what it is.
They're always right, aren't they? They were right about Life is Strange.
God, those...
You were right about Children of Men, which is an example in our lives. And no, Primer wasn't you. Primer was another dude.
Children of Men is a great movie.
Yeah, good movie.
Very well shot.
Yeah.
Not what we're talking about.
Yeah, John is my movie pusher. But so Undertale, obviously really, really big.
Yeah.
Like, really, really big profile, really, really small budget.
So I hadn't played it at all, so nothing.
I'd played like the first maybe third of it.
And so we're coming at it with that kind of thing. Like, you know, Dave's played a little. Like how we're trying to always, sometimes one of us will play a game or one of us won't.
Yep.
In this case, it's me coming brand fresh. Dave's got a bit of experience, but...
Yeah, but nothing even close to a whole experience, especially as I realized when I got to the point which I thought was the end of the game, which...
Spoilers for later!
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, but effectively, this really is a game you need to play more than once to... properly experience.
Yeah, most likely.
But we should probably start off, as we like to do, with our expectations for the game. You know, what, obviously we came into this a bit later, other people were talking about it. So John, like, tell me, what were you thinking about Undertale before you actually played it?
Just like we were talking before, with all my friends, they were talking about the characters in the game with such a closeness and like just an amount of empathy and caring and just so passionate about what these people were and what they weren't going through and what they went through and what it all meant.
Yeah, they have very what I kind of heard a lot about that was like this, these very quirky, very cute, colorful characters that were just very, if not real, maybe just like a little bit lifelike, if that makes sense. Like very, very fun, basically.
Yeah, characters you like.
Yeah, likable. This just unlike, these unique little quirky characters.
Yeah, unlike the next guy in the cover-based shooter, these characters kind of stand out, have a bit of personality. So that's what I was, I heard about. That's what I was expecting.
Yeah. That was definitely something that I saw as well.
Yeah. I also was ready for the game to be a very emotional experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Context? No idea. I have no idea what those emotions were. I just know that people got passionate about this game.
Yeah, that was something that I sort of realized for the first time, because we mentioned this just earlier. I knew that there was that kind of emotional connection. I knew that there was, you know, fun characters, but I kind of, before I sat down, I had no idea what shape that was going to be in, right? Mm-hmm. There's that unique kind of combat thing we were talking about before. Like, when you come across a monster, you don't have to kill them necessarily. You can talk to them and try and, like sort of empathy your way through an encounter.
That was another thing that was talked about a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So that was talked about a lot. And so I knew that was present, and I knew that the characters were there, and I knew that there'd kind of be some emotion behind it, but I had no idea what the plot was. I had no idea...
the structure.
If you're trying to save someone, if you're, like... you know, like, I didn't really know what any of the relationships were supposed to be like.
They talked about monsters and them being monsters in a world of monsters.
Yeah, but again, the monster, I always heard that in the way that, like, Sesame Street uses the word monster.
Right.
You know?
Something.
Yeah.
Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, puppet. It's just like, oh yeah, he's a cute thing, you know? Like, he it's smart, but not a person. Mm. But not a human, I should say. They are persons.
Yes, they're persons. And then, like, the final sort of thing, and, like, the triangle of things I expected, if you're going to pick a shape, which I am, and I did, is don't kill anyone. Oh, yes. My God, do not. Oh, no, don't.
Yeah, that ties back into that whole, talk your way out of encounters thing. Yeah. You know, I knew that you could, there was, like, you know, the genocide run and the pacifist run, you know? And you would get different experiences based on how you played that. So I knew that existed, and I knew that factored into the whole thing, but we'll talk about that later when it comes up,
because
you know, these are just our expectations. They're not actually necessarily what we got from the game, right? So before we do jump in to the actual breakdown and our experiences with Undertale, as always, we do try to keep at least the first part of the podcast spoiler-free.
Yeah.
Especially in games that are narrative heavy, like this one.
Surprise!
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we will let you know when the safeties are off, the triggers can be pulled on spoilers, but yes. We will try and keep it a little bit... We will make our best attempt to make it spoiler-free.
We'll signpost it if
you
don't.
We take no responsibility after this point you learn.
Yeah, right at your own will, you know.
Cool. So, I guess if we're going to jump into the game and not talk about spoilers, the simplest thing we can start with is how the thing looks.
My brain's like, just say platitudes, John. Like, lovely. Yes, the game looks lovely. What does that mean? Wow, lovely.
Oh, just really good and positive.
Totes the best.
And it is great.
Amazeballs.
Yeah, you're painting a real word picture for me, John.
Oh, I know. I'm the orator of the ages. So the game... visually, it's very retro aesthetic, I want to say,
definitely.
Without any sort of cynicism.
even if nobody's played it, they've almost certainly seen screens of it. It's got that classic kind of retro pixel kind of look.
Yeah.
And it's going for that pretty hard. It feels very, very sort of Super Nintendo era for me, and maybe a little bit earlier, maybe like the NES, but somewhere sort of in there.
And I think it's kind of actually, when you look at it, it's like it has those stark kind of old console-y vibes, but it's a bit kind of vague and not too specific. So, because for me, I looked at it and was like, oh, this reminds me of like my Game Boy games that I used to play. And I feel like it can kind of move a little between. It just exists in this kind of old retro kind of zone.
Yeah, and you can tell that with like, so it, obviously it's going for that feeling and that aesthetic without necessarily using the every single one of the restrictions. So like the pixels that are used to make up the character sprites are larger than the pixels that are used to make up like some of the signs and things. So it's not trying to be super, super line and length, authentic and adherence to a particular era or a particular level of technology.
Yeah.
That's also kind of present in the sound as well, because even though you see these kind of 16 sort of bit retro graphics, the sound, I mean, again, I'm not a historian when it comes to this stuff, but I'm pretty sure it's mostly like MIDIs and things, because you definitely hear like violins and stuff, if not legitimate violins, something that sounds a lot more like a violin than a dent, you know?
The creator of the game, Toby
Fox?
Yes, probably. We're not professionals nor historians.
I just read your notes. So. Yeah,
good Lord, what did I write? Created all the songs himself.
Yeah.
And did a lot of them from like free synth tracks and stuff
that's
that
cool.
he found.
I did. Yeah, I did not know that.
From the Wikipedia page that I read it off, because I'm well informed.
The premier source of scholarly information.
Welcome to the Oracle podcast, where we look into facts and figures. Yeah, so he constructed and he went outside of the original sort of bounds, the restrictions, like you said, of holds.
Yeah, it wasn't completely like dogmatic.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that what it comes together as is really quite fun. When I first played, you wanted to say something, God, I'm just going to let you go.
Just made a massive face. So recently they rebooted, this is weird, I'll just roll with it. Recently rebooted Ratchet and Clank.
Yep.
Right. And what they've done is they've remade the original game. It's kind of a weird way, but it's like they've remade something so that when you play it, it's like how you imagined it, but not how it actually was.
Yeah, the XCOM reboot was very much like that for me.
It's like how you imagined it, but it's not true.
Yeah, it uses a modern language to capture a sort of a past and nostalgic experience, right? So, like, if with something like XCOM, if you'd have just cloned it line and length, the gaming tropes have evolved since then.
Yeah.
And so there'd be things that would be frustrating about replicating that and all that kind of thing. And so I think it's very, very smart when it comes to things like Ratchet and Clank, like XCOM, and in this instance, in a different kind of way, like Undertale, that they capture this stuff with feeling as the priority rather than literalism.
Yeah. It, like, from what I can tell, I haven't researched this a lot because we're not actually scholars.
Yeah.
Sorry to ruin that.
I am a scholar, but not in the way that he means it.
Yes. There's obvious restrictions that you run into when you make a game on your own or with a small team. And so, like, the game is leveraged that the line between, like, using the retro aesthetics to make the project manageable.
Yeah.
While you, as you said, feelings were first and foremost.
One of the things that I really like about the soundtrack as well is that in some points, especially near the start of the game with the aesthetic, it actually feels very typical.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just feels like, oh God, here are the random encounters and here's the, you know, the two bar loops of really shitty retro soundtrack I'm going to have to put up the whole game.
The game does start in the
rules. Yeah, and it sets your expectations very heavily with that, but it also immediately works to breaking them and showing you that this is deeper than that.
Almost straight away, the game is doing both these things at the same time.
And when you get to some points where you have these really powerful moments, like the Crystal Caverns, I won't say exactly what happens there, but the people who know that scene, the music, that was the moment where I've just gone, no, fuck off, the music in this game is amazing.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I was, like, chills and shivers as I was walking through that part, and 90% of it was because of the soundtrack there.
Yep.
Other than the like the aesthetics of it and how that brings in brings us into like the whole nostalgia thing. It is very worth mentioning on that point that I think you said that this was based on not based on but sort of mostly inspired by Earthbound.
Yes, apparently. Yeah. I do not know what Earthbound is.
Neither of us have played it. All I know about Earthbound is that secret character from Super Smash is from it. Yes.
And that is literally the extent of my knowledge.
Kid Icarus, something, aliens and psychics.
I'm not sure about you, but I feel like there's a real NES generation thing that I know I'm missing from my sort of gaming history.
Yeah, yeah, me as well. I did have a Super Nintendo, but my parents bought it. I was a child at the time. That isn't as pathetic as it sounds. when my parents bought that for us, it was like 3 months before the N64 came out.
Yeah.
So, like, I basically missed all of that. And there's, like, a whole... Yeah, like, there's this is going to be... The Earthbound illusion is going to be a lot more relevant for other people.
Who know of Earthbound?
But I didn't know it was related to Earthbound at all until you told me that this morning. And I still had a really good time with this game.
I think that's because while the... while it was pulling from this game a lot and other games in general, a lot of the references visually is actually quite broad.
Yeah.
In terms of games of this era.
Yeah, like, I think I might have already said this, but I get... The vibe I get isn't Earthbound or Pokemon or Super Mario or something really specific. It's NES era. Like, it's just... Yeah. It's more a moment in gaming time rather than a specific product. We were talking before about how the game kind of gives you those familiar tropes for the dungeon crawly thing, but also kind of subverts them at the same time. One of the big sort of stickers on the box is that whole sense of the combat where you can talk your way around it, but it's also blending traditional sort of RPG combat with the bullet hell stuff. Yeah. And
bullet hell, for those who may not know, is usually when you control a spaceship or some kind of craft.
Yeah, Ikaruga, Darius Twin.
Those are some games there. Basically,
the really famous one that I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think isn't Galaga like the original kind of
yeah in a way thing? Yeah, that the absolute like the platonic ideal of it is Space Invaders, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's the idea of like lots of shots running across the screen. You have to like, kind of navigate through things, and it's interesting how the game. Like when I thought of the game, I thought of that as you like attacking or something.
Yeah,
like, this,
it was going to be very kind of. I know what you mean when you say it because like it is obviously the bullet hell stuff features in the combat encounters, but it's actually more of a defensive thing. Like when the monster attacks you, you do a dodging sequence with this this thing. And sometimes it's not even necessarily directly related to combat. So it might be like, you know, you have to outdance someone and then you doing the bullet hell section is you doing the dance moves.
I think a good way to break it down is that when a fight occurs, you're presented with four options down the bottom.
Yeah.
Right? Fight.
Which basically is just attack.
It's very simple. Act, which is...
That's the unique one. That's where you've got all of your different, like, empathetic approaches.
Talking.
Like, compliment, hug, chastise, cry, beg for help, all of that kind of thing. Like, and like sometimes it's really, really specific. Like there's a muscle cut type monster and you can flex to kind of like have a flex off with him and stuff like that.
It's very like, they're all contextual to like the monsters and like basically you go into act and then you can choose which monster is in front of you and then you can go through each menu like that.
Yeah.
Then you got items, which is very...
Exactly what you'd expect. Eat a burger to get health back.
It's all your items.
Yeah.
And
mercy.
The final thing is mercy, and there's two options in that. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Spare and flee.
And when you hit flee, sometimes you're successful and sometimes you're not. Okay. When you hit spare, sometimes it works for some monsters. That's all you need to do. But other monsters, you have to get them to that point first, right? Yeah. Through things like complimenting them, and then they feel less like attacking you, and then you can just say, I spare them, and they walk away.
So when the monsters attack you, I've kind of been thinking about this, because we've talked about it. They're not actually... sometimes I don't even think they're actually physically attacking you.
Yeah.
Because the you in these bullet hells, it's not actually you, it's a heart.
Yeah, and that heart represents your soul.
Yeah. Right? And... In a way, you're like making, you're like protecting your soul, from the monsters.
God, it's so obvious now that you say that, but like, because I knew it was your heart, and I knew it wasn't necessarily a physical attack. But like, when you put it in words like that, it just kind of makes me realize that I hadn't actually fully clicked into that realization yet.
Because I feel like we've talked about this a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And we haven't actually, we never mentioned that. It's like, this bullet hell, it's not just a random thing. It's not just you running around. It's your heart, and you're protecting your heart.
Yeah, and when you die, or when your health is reduced to zero, your heart breaks in two and then disappears.
Yeah.
And there's a whole thing about how souls are important in the game, like monsters, souls, and human souls, and the power of a soul, and all that kind of stuff. We'll talk about that later as well.
Yeah.
One of the things I think is very cool about the bullet hell combat in this is every time I felt like it was getting stale, something came in to mix it up, and it was very, very well paced. I keep saying bullet hell combat, but like we've already established, you know, I might compliment someone, and I have to navigate the bullet hell as my manner of complimenting them, you know,
or their response to you. Like, they might still be insecure. There's, to talk about some very early monsters, to get a feel of it. Is it Froggit?
Froggit, yeah. Froggit's the very first one.
The very first monster you encounter. Froggit's, you know, he basically, he does these fly attacks at you, or a little frog will appear and jump, and it's completely ineffectual.
Yeah.
It's almost laughably so.
Yeah.
Some of the fights are like this, just pathetic. And that's very, very straightforward. The way for you to spare him and leave him alone is basically you just tell him he's doing good.
Yeah, yeah. He's got low self-esteem, and you pick him up, and he hops off.
Now, sometimes you'll encounter him with another monster, whose name I forget, because there's a lot of monsters. But basically, he's really angry, but only when other monsters are fighting you.
Yeah, and so if you can spare Froggit and get Froggit to feel good, then this other monster calms down. And, like, there's a lot of fun little things like that where you encounter two or three monsters at a time, and then that affects how they interact with one another.
You still go to the bullet screen,
yeah,
but he's just standing there at the bottom going, dancing around, doing nothing.
Yeah, and some of the bullet hell stuff is really, really interesting because, you know, you'll have two monsters, and then you'll have to dodge both of their bullet hells at the same time, and that totally changes the way you do it, because there's it's all the classic stuff. You'll get like someone who wipes out the whole left side of your bullet hell box because they do a big attack there, but you also have someone else who's doing a lot of little pew pew pews, and you've got to like be on the right side of the box but dodging the pew pew pews, you know.
Yeah. It takes what's very simple, and like it rarely throws too much at you, but then as the game escalates, it can throw more characters, and as you may also fight them. Like, this is something we should also mention. You can fight and kill these monsters.
Yeah. You can totally just flat out kill them. And a lot of the time, killing them is much easier than doing the alternatives.
Way easier, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. The game gets harder and harder the more monsters you kill, because the world becomes more hostile to you.
And I think it's clear, we should also talk and make it clear now, that we didn't kill a lot of monsters. So we're not going to be able to talk very much about the game in terms of fighting and
the whole genocide run of it. Just so that everybody is across it, I played through it once, only once, so I didn't finish the game to my standards.
Which we'll discuss later.
Yeah, so I played once through the neutral playthrough, and you did one neutral and then a replay in True Pacifist.
Yes.
One of the other cool things, one of the other things I will say about the bullet hell, though, it is very impressive, and it is, I say impressive, it's very interesting the way they've melded that with the RPG combat stuff. It isn't primarily a bullet hell game, though, and those games are, you know, like sort of Dark Souls level, require, games of that level of difficulty require a lot of precision to design. And that isn't the primary focus of this game. So sometimes it does become very frustrating, especially in some of the harder fights.
Yeah.
But it is, like I said, it's very, very cool. And as I was saying, it keeps it interesting. Like when you go up against Undyne, for example,
A lot of the boss fights, all the boss fights are different.
Yeah.
The manner in which the bosses fight you is different.
Yeah, they've got like movement elements. So like these, there's like color-coded stuff. So during this color, you can move, but this one you can't. And this is harmless, but only if you're not attacking or something like that. It's very, very cool that they keep that fresh.
At first, I wanted to sort of go and be like, RPG combat would be way too tough, so I'm not going to put it into my game. I'm just going to put this in instead because it's way easier. But
that's the opposite of true, though, right? Like, RPG combat is just maths.
I have no idea. I'm not a game
developer. This is me channeling the year and a half I did of game design. That's not true. The 2.5 years of game design I did. But, like, I... Yeah. In either case, This is much more interesting, regardless of what the motivation behind it was. This is much, much cooler than attack. Defend. Attack. You know, it's you're not just navigating menus.
It's very engaging, and I think it pairs well with the rest of the pace of the game, which can be rather slow and a little meandering, but in the nicest of ways, and like and just sort of this beautiful as you sort of explore the world and move towards your goal. To have it punctuated with these kind of like little bit hectic.
Yeah.
I think that in terms of pacing, it does a good job. And from some of the things I've heard, the random encounters aren't as random as you might.
Yeah. Yeah. That was because I hate random encounters in games. Like, I love Pokemon like anyone else. But when I walk through the fucking caves and I get hit by another fucking Zubat, I'm just like,
Zubats! So,
at the start again, like, I feel like near the start of the game, you're getting random encounter, random encounter, random encounter. It's very, very quick, but the longer you play, the more spaced out they are. Because, again, that's not the focus, but they are trying to build you up with that expectation because they subvert that in very important ways. The random encounters, like you say, they're not as random as you think. I'm pretty sure, because when you come across Froggit, you come across Froggit probably 10, 15 times. Yeah. I don't think they're all a unique, different Froggit. I think it's the same character. I think Froggit is a monster. It's not a type of monster. And so, like, I don't know because I haven't done it. If, you know, I don't know if you kill Froggit, does he not come back?
No, like, there's a part right at the start where there's, like, three of them in a row.
Oh, yeah.
I just, like, of all the characters to pick.
Yeah.
It may be more or less true for some characters.
That's because the boss ones are the ones that are completely unique.
I can definitely say that.
Yeah, the sad ghost and
sad ghost. I love that sad ghost so much.
Yeah.
He's just in his house making mixtapes. He's my homeboy. That ghost.
Well, actually, that's a good segue into talking about characters themselves. So we are moving towards spoiler territory now. Yeah. So if you're still listening and do want to get a taste of this game without that, I'd say this is probably a good time.
Yep.
Say pause. Thanks for staying with us this long. It was a pleasure talking to you. But fuck off now, please.
Oh, cool your boots, Dave.
I don't need those shitty listeners anyway.
Okay,
right?
Buddy.
I can survive with the three people who are still here.
Listen, man, I don't know. Let's not make any speculations, okay?
But yes.
Calm our jets.
Characters. So there's maybe the first character we should talk about is the player character. The player character is a relatively young child, probably in the 8 to 10 range. I really like the design of the player character because, obviously, they're gender ambiguous.
That's another thing that we've talked about before, is that the player character is basically gender ambiguous. And everyone, no one genders them as well throughout the whole game.
And one of the fun things, actually, I like about the items and stuff in this game is the items are, a lot of them are very specifically gendered. So you have the manly bandana and, like, the pretty tutu and stuff like that.
The gun. Bullets not included.
Bullets not included. But, yeah, you have these items and there's no... It's not one of these things where, like, you only pick up, like, armor.
This character's gender ambiguous.
But yeah, and it's just, like, so when you put on the tutu and it gives you 10 defense, you're just like, yeah, I'll fucking put on a tutu, that's rad.
Yeah. Well, I'll wield some ballerina shoes. I don't know how, but I'll use them as weapons. That's fine. No,
that is very cool. We were talking before the recording about some of the political stuff in the game. Yeah. And a lot of the conversation with basically pricks on Twitter was all about, oh, it's Tumblr the game, and they're, you know, they're gaying up the games just for the SJWs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just for us SJWs to enjoy the world a little bit better.
Yeah, how dare we request that people not feel so excluded.
Yeah, we're jerks.
It is one of those things where if you play the game and you're not like a Trump supporter or whatever, you barely notice any of this stuff. You barely know, like we were talking before as well about the gender ambiguity of the character. Like, I realized that the visual design of the character was gender ambiguous, but I didn't realize until I really thought about it, and we were chatting about it before, that, like, none of the characters use gendered pronouns at all to describe you.
Yeah.
They do use them to describe each other because, you know, those are written characters in the game that have, you know, their own gender expressions.
Yeah.
But they don't presume that on behalf of the player, which I think is very cool.
Yeah,
there are a couple of other things as well. Like there's a couple of guards, and the way that like they're there to kill you basically, but the way that you get out of that is by making them realize that they have feelings for each other, and then they go and have a date and they leave you alone.
They eat all the ice cream though.
Yes, which is frustrating.
Very annoying because I need that ice cream.
Yeah, it's a good gold to health kind of ratio.
Yep. But I'm glad the date was nice, okay? I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And look, frankly, I'm happy to have given up the ice cream for something as meaningful as true love.
Oh, well. But we'll see.
It is interesting because there was a lot of that whole, you know, they're queering up the world, Tumblr the game stuff. And to anybody who isn't opposed to that already, it's basically invisible. You
yeah.
know? It is a very... none of it's on the nose. None of it's pushed. There isn't, like, a specific or explicit pro-gay... pro-trans message. It's just that people are just there who, you know, belong to those communities. And it's saddening to see that, you know, the world reacted so poorly.
Yeah, the way I see it is, it's what I call the Fury Road example. Basically, Fury Road is an action game for a more progressive world than the one we live in.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't do anything groundbreaking. It just has women in it.
Yeah.
And they're just part of the
cast. Very fact that there's a woman there is enough to make some people think it's controversial.
Yeah. Just saying.
And it's saddening that it actually is noteworthy, you know?
Yeah, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
In a better world, this is an average movie.
Yeah, you know, and of course, Frozen, Force Awakens, see any of these
they're not exceptional feminist masterpiece.
Yeah.
By any stretch of the imagination, some of them might be. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Not really sure if I'm really the one to talk about
it. They're just a step closer to what the default should be.
Yeah. This is like the bar. This is like, you're a movie now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't be a dick.
So, like, aside from that political tangent, though, basically what we are trying to say there is, like, both of us thought it was cool that the player character wasn't gendered, that they had non-gendered
language.
Yeah, non-gendered language, and there were relationships and dynamics in there that weren't just completely hegemonic, that weren't just completely white male cis kind of situations. And I thought that was very, very cool. The player character is very deliberately not all that expressive throughout the game. If you're looking for like a scope of it, think about like Link in Ocarina of Time. Like, you'll say yes or no every now and then, but most of the time it's people talking around you.
In fact, there's actually only one moment that I can tell where the player character actually makes a movement that isn't just walking around.
Mm?
And you won't have experienced it.
Mm.
Right?
There we go.
Which is why I haven't got into it. But the character, there's almost a joke, is sometimes when people give you things, they put them on the player character's head. Like, they put them on Chris's head. And they do it all the time. And it's like, the player character never does anything.
Yeah.
It never kind of emotes. It never... I was wrong, because there's a part where you do hold an umbrella.
Yeah.
But that's basically...
Oh, yes, I remember that point, yeah.
It's like, it's very... The
use the walk animation is a sprite with two frames. You know what I mean? It's very, very minimalist. And you have characters like, say, Papyrus or other characters in the game. And even though, obviously, all of the characters are that retro minimalist style, they're so much more obviously expressive. Like, Papyrus has stances where he thrusts out his chest and points to the side. And
eyes are bulging.
Yeah. Whereas the player character, it goes beyond just the pronouns and things they use to describe the character. It has a lot of the way... Like you say, like in the animations and stuff, which I hadn't even thought about before now... It is putting as few assumptions upon you as it can. The only thing that is like really explicit is that the character is a child.
Yeah.
And human. They are human.
They are human, yeah. It's a very important plot point.
I mentioned Papyrus briefly as well. Now, something that a lot of people might have heard about was the dancing skeletons, right?
And all the music associated with the dancing skeletons.
Yes.
It makes me so happy.
I was... Because, like, near the start of the game, I was a little bit like, yeah, I get it's cute, but... But when you finally do get up to that point where you meet Papyrus and Sans, which are the two skeletons, you've got Papyrus, who thinks of himself basically as Zorro, and Sans, who's, like, this little kind of snarky... not a trickster, but you know what I mean. Like,
makes bad jokes.
Yeah, yeah. He causes a bit of trouble. He likes to have fun, and he's lazy.
A key point, though, is their relationship is wonderful.
Yeah, like, they care about each other. The dynamic between them is so great.
Yeah.
The thing that brings a lot of these characters to life is the game is just written really, really well. And when I say written, I don't just mean like from a broad plot perspective or whatever. Word by word, it's written very, very well. Yeah. And each of the characters, because none of the characters are voiced, it's all just the text that you see in those little dialogue boxes. They're just very, very specific in like which phrases belong to which characters. Like they all have their own vocal tone and stuff like that. It's very, very consistent and very quirky and alive.
You can almost take a lot of their words, like sentences, not words, good lord, you can take the words out of context. You can take a lot of, you know.
Snow, which character was that?
Oh my god, it's obviously. You can take a lot of their sentences like out of context and you'd be able to tell who said them or
The cadence and the syntax and like the
spelling.
All of that kind of stuff. They also do a couple of little fun jokes with that because obviously you do just have the raw words that they're saying, but they also have there's a robot character called Metaton Metaton is one of my favorite characters in the game. And when Metaton speaks, the dialogue comes in for it. Rather than like one letter at a time, it comes in like four or five letters at a time, and that gives you that real sense that the voice is a bit more digitized and a bit more clunky. Both Sans and Papyrus, and I kind of feel terrible if I'm ruining a joke for someone here, but like all of Sans' dialogue is in Comic Sans, and all of Papyrus's dialogue is written in Papyrus, right? And I remember seeing that. It's like, that's clever, but it also falls into a pattern of a couple of what I call meme-ish humor. Like, there's stuff like, because Papyrus and Sans are the two most hated fonts online. Yep. There's a lot of, like, derpy-eyed dogs, and I hate the derpy-eye meme because I feel like not exactly the most respectful thing to people with, you know, cognitive issues.
Oh, I didn't realize that parallel until this very
moment. Yeah, so you've got, and it's more than one. So you've got the octopus in the waterfall area.
Ooh,
you've got the Temmies. You've got a couple of other dogs. Like, there's a few that fall into that very...
I think that a lot of those can be sort of explained away, especially as the Temmies are based off one of the developers of the game. And are like...
Oh, really?
Yeah. She helped design some of the characters.
Yeah, and I understand that, like, there are going to be people who hear this and go, no, Derpy Eyes isn't about, you know, mental cognitive function. Derpy Eyes is about being really excited to the point of euphoria.
I understand. I'm just... Yeah. I wanted to point that out, but I appreciate
For me, I've always found it a little bit uncomfortable.
Especially when you take... I feel like you can't take things in isolation. You have to bring them into the context. You do both. Do both. It's healthy. Right? And yeah, when you do bring it into that context, that could be a thing.
I'm not trying to like just punch a giant hole in it, but like when we're talking about like the meme-ish humor as well, it isn't just the derpy eye stuff. Like there's also, there's like the ferryman or the ferry woman.
Yeah.
When you get on that.
The ferry person.
The ferry person, yeah. When you meet them, they go, I'm the ferryman or am I the ferry woman? Who knows, right? Yeah. Like, when you get on their boat and they take you somewhere, sometimes it floats out of the water and turns into a cat. And it's very, like, Nyan Cat in the way that it's animated and...
Apparently on the wikis, that's supposed to be a dog.
It's totally a cat. It's completely a cat.
Yeah, I have no idea why.
Everything else in this game is so well designed, and that's supposed to be a dog?
I'm just saying. Anyway.
As I was saying, the humor in this game is amazing, right? Especially between Sans and Papyrus, especially with Metaton. And there's so many good... Like, you were talking about pacing before. The timing on the sight gags and stuff is... brilliant, right? Like it's frame perfect for some of these jokes. And there is something about seeing things in that retro kind of like stiff animation, frame by frame by frame, when things change and when jokes hit and when there are visual gags, there's something about them just coming in with that sound effect. It's just hilarious. Like I laughed out loud many times playing this game.
I think there's a lot of the problem with coming to a game like this late is that a lot of the culture gets built up before you turn up. Yeah. And so things that might have been influenced from this game and you've seen the end of them, right?
Yeah.
Are influencing you when you come to something
like... Yeah, I do think about that sometimes. Like, you know, I'm playing a game like this. Is there a meme this is in reference to that I've never seen or haven't or has since passed into the ether?
Yeah.
And that is a good point because we are sort of, 15 to 18 months on from the release of this game?
The game came out... I don't know why I have the full date.
September 2015?
The 9th of 2015.
Yeah, September 2015. And we're in December 2016 now.
The date, the podcast? Yes.
Yeah.
This is when we recorded. Right now.
In this moment.
Very I don't know what I was going to... I had nothing to come there very. It was just a very
just,
on its own.
Yeah, I just I really wanted to get up on my mic, but I couldn't figure out what I wanted to say. Yeah, so...
Very.
The like I said, the writing is very impressive. It's impressive doesn't even capture it. It's clever and precise and fun and quirky and just cute. Like I use the word cute a lot, and I worried that it sounds denigrating, but the game is very, very cute in the best way. The
game is bloody adorable.
Yeah, and it's not like unbearably so. It's cute in that kind of da 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 kind of way. Not in the I want to squeeze this because it's so smushy and cuddly. More like in the look at it. It's bouncy. Yeah, that makes sense.
Endearing.
It's super childlike. It's got a lot of wonder to it.
Almost a lot of the characters almost innocent.
Yeah, I would say that's very true. That they do have that level of innocence. And like Papyrus, again, completely embodies that. Like,
whereas Sans is kind of a little bit less on the innocence side.
Yeah, he's a lot more switched on, but he still has that, like, I'm going to play a practical joke on my brother because it's funny. And
if you actually think about it, the characters who are less innocent probably have more of a certain... of determination.
Yeah.
Which is something we'll talk about
later.
Yeah,
we'll definitely talk about that soon as well. Were there any other characters that you wanted to hit on, like, before we moved on to, like, the broader plot stuff like that?
So, I think I just want to briefly mention, I think now...
Yeah?
And we'll just give a moment, maybe we won't do this, but there's... You can date, go on dates with some of the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I love, because I always love to go on dates.
Yeah, I love that.
I love to do dates in every
game. I only went
on
a date with Papyrus, and that was... like one of the high points of the game. That was awesome.
I love when you push C and the interface comes in and at the top is the day and it pulls the data from your actual date.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I love that. You can actually go on dates with Papyrus, Undyne, and Alpheus?
I did not know that.
Yeah. And it's...
I suspected you could do Undyne. I didn't think that you'd be able to go on a date with Alpheus.
Yeah. It's one of the requirements for one of the endings, which we'll talk about very soon when we get into true spoiler territory. I'm sorry to do that thing where we go, oh, we'll talk about this later, but we just don't want to spoil the game.
Yeah, we don't want to... Like, I want listeners to be able to have control over what they hear. It's always about respecting the way they want to listen and providing as much variety for as much people as possible.
Yeah, all right. It's true.
That's why you should fund this podcast on Patreon.
Oh my God, no. Can't do that now.
No, we have to save our shameless shilling until the end of the podcast.
Of course.
Yeah. That's where it goes.
Always beg at the end. That way people don't...
People are invested by that point.
Yeah, right? And they don't feel so bad about snubbing you. You don't want to make people feel bad. It's fine. Not what we should be talking about. Dating, loved it. I loved all the dates that you went on.
Yeah.
And the way they relate to the story is wonderful. And how you befriend the characters is just great and very funny.
And just, there's a lot of little things. So we're talking about Alphys as well. I've only done the neutral one, but she?
She.
I remember because I was wondering, and then Metaton refers to Alphys as she a couple of times.
Okay.
Dr. Alphys gives you an upgrade to your cell phone, and she's very socially awkward, and she calls you up to give you advice, and like at really inappropriate, like not inappropriate, but just very inconvenient times.
Usually after you've completed something.
Yeah, and like it's very cute because she's like contacting you too much and stuff like that. And I like how they bring stuff like that out in the characters.
And not only that, but they actually, there's a part where she adds you to the undernet, which is like Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so not only are you getting the conversation between the player character and her.
Over the phone. You're also getting
her inner thoughts kind of as she posts them on Facebook.
Yeah, and she forgets that she added you to it when she gave you the phone. And so she's embarrassed about that later. It sounds very like kitschy when I say it, lay it all out like that, but it's done very, very well and it's very cute.
Yeah.
And a lot of the characters have little things like that. Like, you know, when you call Papyrus and he's like conflicted. And we've already said like we're past the spoiler point. I love that when you go on this was the neutral one for me, so I don't know how this played out for you. But on the neutral one, when I played it, you go on the date with a Papyrus and he gets to the end of the date and he's like, I'm sorry, I can't. I you know... I just want to be friends. And it's just like, he's so invested because he's like, I'm going to do the best date ever and all of this stuff. He approaches it with such gusto.
Yeah.
And even when he gets to the point where he's like, actually, I just want to be friends, that's got so much energy and performance behind it. He's such a fucking fun character.
A lot of the dates go out that way.
Yeah.
It's like you and the character together and you're just... Basically, it all boils down to we'll just be friends because Undyne has a crush on Alphys and Alphys has a crush on Undyne.
Ah.
And it comes up a lot more, I'm not sure, in the second run through.
I kind of guessed it a little bit. It's hinted at it. Yeah.
But when you do some of the stuff before going on the date, you spend more time with Undyne when she isn't trying to kill you with spears.
I love Undyne as a character as well because she's just a fucking badass. You know what I mean? Like, she also has some really great music in her fight because she attacks you. At first, you have to, like, even if you don't want to hurt her, she attacks you, and so you have to work around that. But, like, she's got some cool mechanics in her fight as well, and she's just boss. Like, she takes off the mask. She's got that glorious red hair. And the eye patch, yeah, she's just, like, this person. And, like, they've spent a lot of time building up the mystique of Undyne. This is the first time we actually see her.
When you first encounter her, the character's not gender when you first meet them. It's an armored knight.
An armored knight, yeah.
And Papyrus goes and talks to them, and you're kind of going, oh, this is Undyne. They're coming to get me.
Mm.
And they do. They hunt. She hunts you.
Yeah, the first time you don't even actually see her. Like, she's in the shadows and Papyrus is talking to this figure in the shadows. Then you see this full suit of, like, badass, like, killer black knight armor.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over time, she eventually says a word to you.
And then she takes off the helmet. And that's pretty much it for the main fight.
Like, the look is so powerful, but I was not expecting anything like it at all. Like, the word I learnt looking this up is Piskine. She's a fish monster, and she's got, like, these long yellow fangs and this, like, shock of, like, blood red hair, and she takes this thing off and looks at you, and you're like, my God, she's scarier without the armor. Like, and then she comes, and she's got this... and it's like, it's so well designed, like such a beautifully well designed character.
All of the primary characters, in fact, I would say all the characters well designed.
Yeah, yeah.
But all the primary characters, especially, are filled with a bunch of love.
Mm.
It's evident when you see how they behave, how they talk, how they look, how they act. Every part
even
facilitates...
just the little minor characters like the seahorse and the shy mermaid and all of that kind of stuff. Like, they're really well thought out. Muffet. Was one that, because I think Muffet was like a in the credits, so like she was like a guest design.
Yeah.
But Muffet looks amazing. I really love her, and her music is great too. And
a lot of great characters. We could just talk about how great they are. But
it's we
kind
can
of
probably move on a little bit.
And very inappropriate over the medium of a podcast.
Yeah.
Unless you want to do a join the dots with us, please pull out sheet B, link A. Anyway.
Or go to Google and
go
search
to Google
for the characters.
Or
you guys probably have the internet, right?
Or get the game. Game was like $10.
There we go.
Game is $10.
Is it still $10? Yeah.
Oz store. I think I bought it for $5.
Yeah, I got it as part of a Humble Bundle.
Yeah, I'm probably going to buy some merch because, like, this is a real good game.
Yeah, it's great. It's really, really good.
So moving on from just the kind of... It's a bit of vagueness of the characters, but in terms of getting to the plot.
Yeah. Yeah, we should move into that.
Yeah, and really just to some... Like, to just get into the story, so satisfied.
Yeah.
And just, again, I'm just saying nice things. There's not helpful.
So one of the things that...
Actually, this is a good point. You should start because...
I've only done the neutral run.
Yeah.
Right. So when I was playing the neutral run, I was like, some of these characters are fun. Some of the comedy is smart. I do like it. I don't know why it was the runaway success that it was. I get about 80% of the way through my run, and I start getting into the meat of it. And so you go to the Crystal Caverns, and you talk. You're reading through the history of the world, and you see that, like, what the whole deal is with human souls and monster souls, and who was trapped and why. And what's the sun's name?
Asriel. I think so. We might be pronouncing all these names wrong.
We've never
heard them out loud because there's no audio in the game.
I think it is something like Asriel.
It is.
And so you learn about Asriel. You learn about the first human, and they had a friendship, like a sibling like relationship, and all of that stuff. And the music in that section is just really powerful. And that's when it hits me. I'm just like, oh wow, you know, like there's just like a real sense of gravity there. Yep. And then, like, there's a point right near the start of the game where they break the fourth wall and they have some of these meta elements, right? So
yeah, which run throughout the whole game.
Yeah, they run throughout the whole game and they constantly remind you of them. But I thought it was mainly just humor.
Yeah.
But you realize how central that stuff is to the plot, right? So right near the start, you have the option of whether or not you kill Toriel, do you want
to... So Toriel, you encounter Toriel in the ruins, and she's there to intercept any humans that might fall into the world and try and look after them.
Yeah, because the king, Asgore, wants to kill them.
Yes. Asgore, who is one of my favorite characters. Mm. Throughout the whole game, the game is both simultaneously making you afraid of Asgore because he wants to kill you, but everyone talks about how nice he is.
Yeah, somebody calls him, like, fluffy dumple pants or something like that.
Yeah, and the character is that, and you meet him.
Yeah, and it's like, there's so many points, like, because when I did my neutral run, right? And in a neutral run, when you meet Asgore, you have to fight him. There's nothing else you can do.
Yeah. He actually destroys the mercy option.
Yeah, he brings out his spear and slices through the interface and destroys the option on your taskbar, which is very, very cool.
Yes.
So I have to fight him, and he knows, because he's trying to collect all the human souls so he can break this barrier spell that keeps the monsters trapped in the underground, and he wants them to be free and to live peacefully on the surface. But when you come up against him, he's so sad that he has to kill you. And it sounds like such a every movie ever. Oh, this person laments the evil they have to inflict. How tragic it is for them. But I feel like they sell it in this quite well. And they do it by, as they always do, fucking understating it, right?
Yeah. You have 10 sentences with Asgore before the fight starts.
And everything is conveyed in just, like, his face and the way he moves and just, like, the specific elements of his visual design. And it's very, very cool. But so I've gone through the whole thing, and, you know, you get to Asgore, you have to kill Asgore and all this kind of thing. And right at the end of the game, all of this meta stuff comes back in. Like, with Toriel at the start, she's the first monster. She has you in her house. She wants to protect you from Asgore. And she, when you say, I want to leave, she's like, no, you can't, because it's too dangerous out there. And you say, you keep saying you want to leave. And she's like, well, if you want to leave, you have to prove that you can survive by killing me.
Basically,
and yeah, if you kill her, you walk outside the house and this other character is there. I was just like, yeah, feel good, don't you, murderer? Hmm? How did that feel to murder that person who wanted to care and love you? And if you reload your save and don't kill Toriel.
Which you can do. Which is, the game tells you you can do, but it's not what I would call intuitive.
Yeah. So you reload the save and don't kill Toriel, right?
Yeah.
And then that same character is like, I know what you did. I know you still killed her the first time. And it's like, what the fuck? Like,
when I fought Asgore, there's an option you get in dialogue that's like, hey, Asgore, you've killed me before.
Yeah.
And Asgore's like, I know. And he'll just do it again. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting. Like, those meta elements come back into it. And as I said, like, once you get, like, in a later part of the game, you start to see those. I'm like, oh, this isn't like, you know, Fallout 4 or Deus Ex, where you play through the game and you can get, like, a different ending, but that's kind of it. It's actually like, no, to properly play this game, you've got to play it more than once.
Yep.
Like, and I was reading some stuff on the wiki later about how there are whole areas that you don't get to go to unless you're playing either the genocide route or and totally separate areas for the true peace route. And like, if you finish a genocide game and then start a new game, it affects the outcome of that new game in a way that it's different than if you hadn't done a genocide route first. And
I love how exciting a simple DAT file in the computer somewhere that says player did this can do, like, affecting the game. It's just that there's a single file, it's a hidden little file, and then it holds all of this.
Yeah.
And it travels across your saves.
And it's really interesting as well, because, like, when I did my neutral run, right, and I got up to Asgore, and he destroyed the mercy option, I was like, I don't want to have to kill this guy, I'm just going to let him kill me. Because if he gets my soul, that's the seventh soul that he needs that he can use to break the spell. And I was just like, I'm just going to let him kill me. But then it was like a game over screen, reload your save. And I was like, oh, I really thought that was going to be the end. I really thought I could have ended it like that.
No, can't.
Yeah.
I mean, technically you could.
I could have just walked away.
But it's not really the conclusion the game is trying to draw you towards.
Yeah, yeah. It's not one of the three main endings.
Yeah. I felt so fucking bad about killing Toriel.
Yeah, that's
it
the thing.
It haunted me the entire game.
Like, you kill Toriel because, like you were saying before, you can avoid killing her, but it's not like with Froggatt where it's like, compliment, spare. You have to hit the same option something like 20 or 30 times.
Save 20 times.
20 times, yeah. And I tried that, but I think I must have only done it like... I didn't look it up or anything. I was just like, oh, maybe if I keep saying spare over and over again, she'll eventually listen. But I guess I gave up before 20 because...
Yep. You can, when you start doing it, her dialogue options do start to change.
Oh,
she
yeah.
does start to talk
that,
differently.
That's something else that I really love is like in the bullet hell sections, like between turns, the characters have lines of dialogue. And so it's like you're going through this encounter and like you, with Undyne, she's talking about why she's fighting you and what the purpose is and, you know...
How she feels as it's happening.
Yeah.
How they all feel it's, as it, you continue
it's
to...
It's shockingly cinematic for a turn-based text combat sequence.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like...
I said it before, probably a bit hyperbolically, but pointing to all of my AAA games going, none of these games have made more affecting characters than the ones in like Undertale. Like,
yeah.
I was just impressed by how much
oh,
I
Oh, come
cared.
On. You don't like Damon Baird from Gears yeah. of War?
Sorry, I'm not a fan of Marcus Fenix, right? Like,
but have you seen his bandana and his gun that is a chainsaw?
I have. Not really everything, though, is it? Yeah, so when you do the neutral ending and you get to the end after you defeat Asgore, and the fucking flower turns up.
Yeah, so the flower is the character who mocks you for killing Toriel and tells you that he knows what you did when you reset time and went back and reset your save file. And so yeah, then he shows up, and I'm at like I tried to spare Asgore right at the end because he was down on one knee begging. You know,
no, I did the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Flowey is the character. Yeah. Flowey shows up, kills Asgore, takes all the souls, and you have to fight this fucking monster. This grotesque monstrosity.
The
yeah.
reason why it's so distinct and so grotesque
yeah.
is the game is done in sprites and
yeah.
pixels and those solid colors. But then when you get to
Flowey?
Yes. So when you get to the fight with Flowey, it's all Photoshop actual
yeah,
photos.
Yeah, and it's like these really grotesque kind of sprites, like of
yeah.
like eyes that seem to be cut out of magazines and stuff. It's really well visually designed.
Yeah.
And unlike the rest of the bullet hell sequences where you're in this tiny little box in the center of the screen, it's probably like what, 1/10 of your screen space, if that?
Yeah.
This is the full screen space. And it's horrifically difficult, and Flowey has the same power that you as a player character have, in that Flowey can save the game, right? And Flowey uses that as part of the fight, and is like, mocks you for like, you thought you were the only one with this power. I have control of time as well. And I'm just playing this, I'm like, holy crap, like I had no idea how much deeper this rabbit hole went, you know? And like, eventually you do overcome, and like, you were saying that you didn't lose against Flowey.
Yeah, and I, as I was playing it, I was going, oh, wow, this is clever, because I felt like I should have lost this
yeah,
fight.
Yeah, I felt like that as well. There were a couple of points where I was like, I wonder if I can lose this, but I was killed by Flowey 4 or 5 times before I finally defeated them.
I do not want to say...
every time you die, it exits the game, and you have to load up a save file, and the save file you come into is whichever one Flowey has made, the most recent one that Flowey has made during that fight.
Wow, really?
And every time Flowey's like, because the Flowey mocks you at the start, and it's just like, I'm going to save the game now, so you have to reload and be killed and gnashed apart by me over and over. And they're constantly mocking you for that, and it's so, and like, there's a big thing in the game where it's all like, you know, when you hit a save point, when you hit a game over screen, it says, you know, you should stay determined, or you know, you are filled with determination. And I was at this point, I was just like, fuck you, Flowey. Ah, no, I'm not giving up.
Yeah.
And eventually, yeah, you destroy Flowey
with the help of the six other
the souls. They kind of like
the other children.
Flowey expects them to kind of obey Flowey, but Flowey doesn't have control over them, and because the souls grant the monsters huge amounts of power, if that wasn't apparent.
It's explained during the game, actually.
Yeah,
and
yeah, multiple
very,
times. And
it gets kind of revealed as well. And
it's one of the things that isn't multi-layered. You know, like, I'm talking about these save games and Flowey and all of this kind of stuff, and, like, they talk about, like, the word they use for experience is EXP, but you find out later in the game that EXP doesn't stand for experience, it stands for execution points.
Yep.
And then they have your level, which I think they spell out L-O-V-E, and it's like level of violence... is what that stands for, or something like that.
Yeah.
And like determination is also this weird, like, it's a quantity in the world, right? And so, like, determination is what allowed Flowey to become alive and stuff. And this is all stuff I learned by, because as soon as I finished the game, through that neutral run, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh man, I don't have time to play this again. But I, and like,
so here's a question.
Yeah.
Did you kill or spare Flowey?
I killed Flowey.
I spared Flowey.
Yeah?
You know what Flowey says?
What?
He says, really? You're going to spare me? He goes into sort of like a, okay. Well, if you think this is the best way to do things, do it again.
Yeah.
Don't kill anyone.
Yeah. See, I killed Flowey, and Flowey said something along the lines of, I knew you had it in you, and then died. Because it was at that point where I was like, I felt like it was emotionally justified. Like, I hadn't killed anyone else throughout the game other than Toriel. And I wanted to say this before as well. Like, because it's so easy to not kill anyone else after Toriel, you feel so guilty. Like, you carry it with you the whole game.
Every time you save someone,
yeah,
there's a part of me that was always like, you didn't save her.
I didn't save her. And there's a point towards the end as well. Just before you talk to Asghar, you talk to Sans again. And he says something along the lines of, you know, you're going to be judged by your actions. Think about what you've done. And then the game just stops the dialogue sequence for like 10 seconds. And Sans comes back in and says, we're not actually going to do that, but it was important you had those thoughts.
Yeah, that.
And I was like, ah.
Yeah, well.
And I was sitting there, I was just like, I killed Toriel and I feel really shitty about it. Yeah. It's just so well done. Like, and this is all just from the neutral run. You know what I mean? Like the genocide run goes into all of this like universe bending shit, and like from what I've read, and like the true pacifist run goes into all of this stuff.
I don't know if I want to get into any more of it.
Yeah,
to be honest, I think we've talked a lot, probably more than a lot of people have talked about with the story. And like, sure, I could get in and explain the whole.
But I hope that in a way I'm glad that you're not, because I'm probably going to go home after this recording and do another run. Yep. You know, I'm going to do the true pacifist run and do what I feel would have been my intended run if I'd been able to do that the first time.
Just you got to go on those dates. Got to go on all those dates.
Yeah, I really want to find out more about Undyne, and I really want to find out more about Alphys.
Yep. That's pretty much it. Just don't hurt anyone. Go on all the dates. That's my motto in life. But that's actually it's pretty apt, though.
Yeah, it actually is surprisingly sort of mirrored.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was Undertale, a really fun game. I was surprised at how deep it was. Yeah. And, yeah, honestly, just quite just nuanced and solid.
Very good. Fun. Engaging. Very lean. I don't think it wastes a lot of your time. And especially, even when you do the game again, doesn't waste your time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really looking excited to giving it another go. Yes. and finding out some of those other options. Next time, though, we will be doing another big-budget game, and this is one that I think a lot of people will be excited for.
Yep. We're going to be playing The Last of Us.
Now, I have not played, like, I've not finished The Last of Us ever. I played the first maybe hour of it, and I, quite frankly, I got frustrated with the stealth sections and gave up. But you've finished that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy, have I finished that game. Yeah. I played it. I think I got the collector's edition. It was the last collector's edition was gifted to me, and I played through that. And Yes.
I am looking forward to that, because as is the purview of this show, it is an excuse for me to do something I really should have done a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
I am a little bit apprehensive, because I feel like I was sick of zombies when Left 4 Dead came out.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little bit concerned, because it's all like, oh yeah, it's so dire. And I'm kind of just predicting that the end of the game is going to be a little easy, but...
Ooh, we'll, is it going to be easy?
Yeah.
It's going to be a thing. Yeah. Let's not talk about it.
Yeah, we'll find out when I play it.
Yeah.
But Last of Us, I am excited to actually be able to be a part of... Because that's probably the oldest one we've done so far, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been, what, 2012
Good
or something?
Lord, man, I have no idea about it. It was PS3. It's old school.
It's a generation ago, whereas the other stuff we've done has all been in the last sort of 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, that's very true.
So this is going to be the oldest one we've done so far. This is going to be the biggest catch-up for me, and miraculously, like, the end hasn't been spoiled for me at this point, so I still can probably get a kick out of it.
Okay, yeah. Good, because it's got an end.
Yeah, yeah, and I know at least that, And I'm kind of sitting here going, oh, great. Joel's going to die and Ellie's going to be sad. You know, like that's...
I am, for everyone at home, I'm doing a poker face.
But like, yeah, if it's just that predictable ending, oh no, a character does a noble sacrifice, I'm going to be really fucking angry. Not at the game, because, you know, tropes and everything. I'm going to be angry at everyone else for thinking that that is worthy of this level of praise.
Let's talk about that next time.
Yeah, for sure.
As always, this has been a success because we played a game.
Yes.
We hadn't played before.
And like, this is very, very consistent. Each one we've played... I've always expected I'll have some level of fun, but I've had a lot more than I was expecting. So it is just a super rewarding experience.
Yeah.
Also, I hope that it's fun for you guys at home, but like, quite frankly, doesn't really matter.
Matters to me. I hope that maybe this can give you an excuse to play a game.
Yeah.
If you hear something you like, give it a shot, set some time aside.
And on that note, of your own experiences and your own feelings, why don't you... put them into the comment section in this area so that Facebook's algorithms and whatnot spread this around a little bit further.
Yeah, Facebook, the Twitter, whatever else we've probably
like,
set up
like, share,
right now.
Subscribe, all of that kind of thing.
Do we have an email address?
We do have an email address. I have forgotten it.
Yeah! Well, we'll just insert the email address right here.
That's slowpokespodcast@gmail.com. We're also at slowpokescast on Twitter. There we go. So you can email us there. You can also comment on whatever is below. Wherever you're listening, I'm sure there'll be a comment section as well.
Probably something.
You can hit us up on Twitter and...
the places.
The other one, yeah.
Wherever the places are, wherever you find this, it'll be there.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll have all of that.
Check out the show notes. Peoples.
All right. Thanks once again for joining us. And I guess we'll see you next time for The Last of Us.
See you next time.